got a special intro for us here. Hold on.
Oh, good.
I blew the conch. Oh. I'm summoning us all to a meeting of yak babies.
Great. That would have been much better if you had just whipped out an actual seashell.
Yeah. I wish I had one. I used to when I was growing up. We had a conch shell in my house.
No,
I
Googled. Is there a I'm gonna derail this right from the beginning. Is there an established pronunciation? I hear it like 50-50 conch or conch.
Yeah, I've heard both. I always say conch.
I think it's conch.
Are you guys conch guys or conch guys? I'm conch. On team conch.
I'm on conch.
Wow, we're 50-50. Yeah.
You guys love conch.
All right. 3, 2, 1.
Yeah.
The Yak Babies. Sex, presidents, and sometimes books.
Welcome to Yak Baby. I'm going to start so
fast. You're not going to blow it again?
I will blow it again.
You'll blow it a bunch of times.
Hey, now we're talking.
This is, I'm ready to beat the shit out of somebody. Should we murder Aaron?
Do it.
This is definitely worth it.
It is worth it.
I'm gonna run this whole intro.
It actually sounds like a 12-year-old kid blowing it too. It's like weak and thready.
Yeah, I mean it's gotta be hard, right?
I mean, it's not that much different from the ham horn.
Oh shit! Now we're talking.
So I looked up the pronunciation.
You pulled that out real fast.
Yeah, ready to go.
And it's on his homepage. His phone.
Was the app already open?
No, it was right on the screen. It's right there, and it comes up quickly.
So I looked up the pronunciation, conch or conch. Turns out either one, the fuck. Can't somebody make a decision in the world?
Wait, what is it?
Either one. Yeah,
either one. Both. Not neither one. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. So we'll have to war over this.
3, 2, 1.
Yeah.
No, this is it.
Yeah, we're let's in. Do it. Jump in.
The Yak Babies. Sex, presidents, and sometimes books.
Welcome to Yak Babies, a new podcast on the internet sponsored by Dave's Dentistry, all up in your mouth. My name is Aaron. I'm here with my personal pals, Dave.
Hello, fellas.
Brick.
Hello, fellas.
And Old Irish Nico.
Hello, fellas.
Welcome to the first episode of our new series titled Canon or Canon, where we review books in the Western literature canon, especially ones that are tied to like high school reading lists and middle school reading lists, that kind of thing, and discuss them and then assess their relative value and whether they should be included in the canon or shot out of a canon. This day's entry is Lord of the Flies, the first one we landed on. That's a classic reading list book. This is on probably every high school reading list at some point, right?
Nope.
Well, I was going to say,
except for Dave's.
And mine. I somehow escaped reading this book as well. I wanted to ask the first question, which is, what is all of your experience with this novel? Brick, you said you read it a couple times.
I read this in high school, and then I taught it maybe 5 years ago.
Gotcha.
Just one time. So.
And when you read it in high school, did you like it?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. Yeah. And I liked the movie, too.
Yeah, sure. Nico, what about you?
I read it in high school, but kind of vaguely remember it. But it's kind of one of those books that even if you haven't read it, it's kind of so prevalent in pop culture that you kind of know what happens.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say about to Dave, because he and I both didn't read it in high school or hadn't read it ever until this week. But I knew the plot backwards and forwards. Dave, did you have prior exposure? Did you know what this is about, really? Did you have like a sense of the beats of the story?
Not really. I mean, I knew it was a bunch of boys stranded on an island, and then at some point, some savagery takes over. Right. But that's really all I knew.
This is one of the novels that was summarized in the Great American Bathroom book that I had that we've talked about before. So I definitely spent a lot of time just reading over that summary as a kid. So I knew that. And then I'd seen the movie as well. And you just like, it's pop culture wise, it just shows up in so many different contexts, right? You feel like Lord of the Flies is a pretty available reference. Written by William Golding, published 1954. Is that right? I'm not sure why I didn't look beforehand.
Yes.
Well, let's dig into it. I really enjoyed this book. That was fantastic. Despite knowing everything that happened, I mean, I knew all the plot beats. Nothing was surprising, really. The experience of reading it was way different, and I was really engrossed the entire time, and particularly so by the descriptions of the island. It's a really beautiful, and reminded me at times, it's not as elaborate or a stream of consciousness as Malcolm, I can't think of his last name now.
Lowry.
Lowry.
The volcano.
I want to say Malcolm Gladwell. It's definitely not that guy. As Lowry. But it is has some of that sense of like just being overwhelmed by a description of lush greenery and the sun and the rocks and stuff like that. What do you make of the setting of this book?
It does do a good job of kind of, for one thing, laying out. I think one of the things about this book that makes it so widely assigned to high school is that like there's a ton of reading comprehension shit that you can get. Like you can map out where everything is on the island. You can map out like what happens in this chapter. Like there's like 1, 2, 3 things that happen, you know, and it's like straightforward. There are basically right answers and wrong answers. And there's like, he's pretty clear about, you know, there's one end of the island where the savages are, and then there's the neck, and then there's the hill where they make bonfire in the beginning, and then the bathing pool where they first come in. And yeah, I think it's very kind of concrete, I guess.
Yeah.
I think it's also, it's very lush and beautiful the way it's described, but it's also hostile. You know, like there's not a ton of food besides the pigs.
Right. And fruit.
And fruit. Right. But that gets a weird, the way it just doesn't, you know, it's, there's a lot of sort of biblical references in this book or like, you know, allusions or parallels, but they don't match up right, which is purposeful for sure. I think from beginning to end, it like sets up the biblical parallels, but then doesn't deliver them or delivers them in another way. And it does it right down to like this place is not some kind of Garden of Eden paradise. You know, it's dangerous and it's sinister.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's definitely.
But without purpose, it just exists. Right,
right, right. Along with what Nico was saying, the symbolism, I guess, or like the sort of things to interpret here are also pretty plentiful. And I can see how it's an easy, or it's a good book for like testing or sort of responding to for younger readers, because it sort of gives you a couple handholds on, you know, what does a symbol mean? What is this character doing? Like themes, they're all over it, which doesn't mean to say that it's simple necessarily, but it does. It's almost like you can take your pick and almost anything is available for interpretation and analysis in this book. Like nothing seems too hidden.
For the characters as well, which is one of the things I really like about this book, is that it's a little tricky with its simplicity. You know, I think not to get too far ahead into the plot, because I think this kind of leans pretty heavily into whether it's still relevant, but a major part of the plot is the political, I guess, machinations of the two leader boys, and the ability of one to sort of not even necessarily intentionally, or at least fully intentionally, invert the use of the interpretation of the symbol of the beast to really fuck things over. And it's, you know, there's a healthy dose of dramatic irony, because the reader knows right from the beginning, or very close to the beginning of that whole section, what the beast actually is. And then the kids' confusion about the symbolism, I think it's very easy then in school for students, when they're learning about how to identify symbolism and figure out what it means and attach themes and meaning, to then think they got it, and then they get to those later parts of the book and have that turned on its head. And I think that makes it a pretty powerful read, especially for, you know, a 12
that's a good point.
14 year old child.
Dave, what did you think of this book?
You know, I enjoyed it. Definitely really well written. I don't think that I would reread it necessarily, but I feel like if I had read it when I was 14, 15, 16, it's something that probably would have grabbed me and that I would have continued to read into adulthood. But I kind of feel like I missed out.
That's an important question I wanted to ask too, which is like, does this, we talked about this before with certain books, wondering whether there's a right or wrong time to read them, right? Catcher in the Rye was our main example of this. So Dave, you're saying that Lord of the Flies would maybe be a book that would be better suited for reading at a younger age, like maybe 12, 13.
I don't know, for
like
me
that.
At least, yeah.
Right. Brick, Nico, thoughts on that line?
Yeah, the complexity reminded me a lot of Flowers for Algernon, which I didn't read until I was an adult. And, you know, that's another book that you hear a lot about and you kind of know the story. And then I went to read it as an adult and I was like, oh, this is a kid's book. Like, this isn't, you know, like there's an expiration date. And I would say like 14 at the oldest would kind of be the age I would imagine like this being appropriate for. Like,
You know, I didn't feel like I was reading YA.
Oh, I thought it did.
It doesn't read like a kid's book, even though it's about kids. Right. I mean, it doesn't. It's not a difficult read.
Yeah.
And it maybe reads a bit like a kid's book from the 50s or 60s, but it doesn't read like YA does now. And I'd say it's, you know, from just vocabulary. And
the reason it reminded me of Flowers for Algernon and not like Mockingjay is that like Flowers for Algernon is just, it's not a kid's book in subject matter necessarily, but it is written at like a specific level of complexity, you know. And it's like this too is like, you know, there aren't like big words, there's not a lot of, you know, flowery language. It's not difficult to understand at any point, you know. It's not like even Hemingway, you know, like it's just like structurally simple.
There were some words that I had to look up.
Yeah, I agree. But I also think that what it's doing under the surface, there's some tough words in it. I think structurally it is fairly simple, but I think there's a lot going on under the surface that will be lost on younger kids. I think younger, like middle school age kids will largely see it as a morality story, which, you know, it is in a way. But I think really what it is requires having some time existing in the world to understand what the book's actually saying is about, which is why it's probably ripe to be read as a child. And then
I agree with that, Brick. I was going to say the same thing. That this seems like a book that I could read every 10 years or so and find new resonances and relevances. You had mentioned earlier, is this still relevant today? And I think it definitely is. Like, there's tons of stuff. If you wanted to layer on like political filters or lenses or whatever, there's any number of current political crises going on that fit in this book perfectly. I was, I guess, not surprised, but pleased by that, I guess, that it's just like there's so many things that Golding is up to here. They were coming out of, you know, the post-war political landscape in the West, but are still roiling and still complicated now and obviously not resolved. So yeah, I think that's totally true. This book could be sort of reviewed continuously.
Yeah, I think six or eight years ago, I probably, my answer to this would have been, it's a great book, but it's past its prime.
Yeah, Trump era changes all that.
And I would have been wrong. I think the Trump era changes it pretty dramatically in its relevance. And, you know, I mean, really what this book about is just how thin that line is between order and chaos, you know, and how not substantial it is, and how easily it can be swayed. And it's just, I mean, it's just so fragile. And neither one can exist without the other, right? It's that you can't just have order because it doesn't, they won't eat, right? They need to do both the things. But, and so they're both incompatible and inextricable at the same time, which is very complicated. And then to illustrate that through children.
There's this line, this is after the ship has passed and Ralph confronts Jack about letting the fire go out to hunt instead. And they're debating, you know, we need meat versus trying to find a ship. And then Golding says this. Jack stood up as he said this, the bloody knife in his hand. The two boys faced each other. There was the brilliant world of hunting, tactics, fierce exhilaration, and skill. And there was the world of longing and baffled common sense. And that seemed to me to really, like, stand out as an encapsulation of that. The idea of baffled common sense, that one version of the world is easy. It might be not easy physically or sort of in terms of, like, strategy or tactics, but it is straightforward. Another world is much more gray and full of complexity and nuance and abstraction. It's hard to live there. That's what Ralph is trying to do, but can't really. So you had both mentioned comparisons to contemporary YA literature. That's an important thing I want to talk about too, and maybe come to at the end as well when we get to our canon versus canon discussion. But I was thinking about, as I was reading this, about current YA literature and why I react so badly to it, typically for good and bad reasons probably. And one thing that I noticed that Golding is doing here is he's never too far in the characters' heads. A little bit of introspection, certainly, and kind of inner thoughts, but not a ton. It mostly is outside of them. And I found that really refreshing, I guess, and really exciting, because one of my problems with YA tends to be too much focus on the nasal-gazing, or navel-gazing is the proper expression, or like kind of the worrying of it all. And it gets precious sometimes, whereas this was just, they had some interiority, but not a ton. It was mostly their actions and the juxtapositions that gave those thoughts definition, which I like a lot, versus like someone doing something and thinking about their ex-girlfriend or whatever. I just felt more, there was more going on, or there's more, and it was more interesting, I guess.
Yeah, I'm with you. I find modern books, not just YA books, but a lot of modern books in general, get too caught up in that, in just interiority, and not in a not in a way that's
right.
good, just in a way that's like filling page. Like, here's what the character's probably thinking. And that's not, I can right. understand why that's a sensible way to present a book to an 8-year-old.
Right. And for an audience of teenage readers, like high school right. readers, or then of course adults read YA, I always wonder, like, don't you want something more than this?
And it's kind of the classic show don't tell, where if you're just going to say like, oh, he's sad.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. Whereas like yeah. if they're having a conversation and like one of them's angry, one of them's scared, you know, that's more effective.
Yeah. Did you feel like the affective response reading this book, like, so you're kind of emotional, you know, compared to or sort of set aside next to the kind of critical discussion or response? Did you feel like you were, when I say aroused, I don't mean sexually, I just mean like emotionally aroused in yeah. some way by this book? Like, did it get to you? It got to me for sure.
Yeah.
Like, I found myself really hating Jack and like in a weird way, where it was like, yeah. fuck this kid, and just
Ralph.
Oh, he'd Ralph too?
Roger.
No, yeah. I'm sorry, not Ralph.
Did you guys Roger. Like Ralph?
Oh, yeah, Roger, yeah.
Did you guys have the edition with the Lois Lowry afterward?
Yeah.
No. Did you read that?
Yeah. Mine has Lois Lowry and Stephen King.
The Lois Lowry one is pretty weird. It's just basically about how much she likes Ralph and like how she was always on Team Ralph. And I was like, Ralph is a fucking asshole. Like, they're all assholes. Except, I guess, Simon.
Yeah.
Simon's the only one I didn't hate.
Yeah. Yeah, Simon's the only character who has, like, good. Even Piggy sucks.
Yeah. Simon's really interesting. Most of the characters have an opposite, which is very interesting, mm-hmm. I think. Like, Roger and Piggy, opposites. And then Ralph and Jack, opposites, but closer to right. the middle, right? But Simon's sort of
yeah
somewhere else, you know? He's, like, too good, but in a... I don't know. It's hard to figure out. And then there's a weird thing where he like has visions. So it's hard to figure out Simon, but because he's out, like the other characters yeah. are so like perfectly symmetrical in how they're created, which is interesting. But then to have him kind of, it seems for a while like they're setting him up like Jesus again to get into the biblical stuff. But then it doesn't pay off that way.
Well,
and it's, so it
kind of does, right? Like he comes down from the mountain and gives a sermon and is killed.
Yeah, but without the Jesus.
So he tries to save him. Like, he tries to save them by saying the beast right. isn't the beast. The beast is just your imagination. And then...
But he fucking fails, you know? So, I mean, that's what I mean. Like, it doesn't... Maybe that's the commentary. I don't know. But I... You know, right. he does the Jesus beats, but then there's not the Jesus pay.
But he's crucified like Jesus was, right?
But he doesn't come back. Right. There's right. no salvation. It's just they murdered him.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like a metaphysical text in that sense.
So I mean, like, thematically, it's not lining up with the... Right, it's the plot hits, but then not the rest, which is interesting. It has to be purposeful, but
I find the triangulation or like the existence of Simon really interesting because it lets Golding avoid too much of the pro-con structure, where Simon allows us to be like, no, everyone is somehow wrong too. Like every approach, pure logic that Piggy represents, pure aggression and violence and war that Jack represents, passivity that Ralph represents, like they all have these failures. Even Simon's like more kind of like theological or like religious, spiritual, mystical approach doesn't work. And so it lets you not take sides and more just be like, oh God, everything fucking sucks. Like it just is dispiriting in a way, which is interesting.
Yeah. It's just a sick balance that there's no, just a constant back and forth. Right. And it's just a balance and you're either balanced or you're unbalanced and that's it.
Wavering between two poles in terms of action and decision, and the consequences of every decision you make are going to be drastic and horrible, and increasingly so as characters start dying and are murdered or whatever.
Yeah, they're not accidental deaths.
They're horrifying. I kept thinking the kid with the birthmark in his face was going to come back in some form.
Yeah.
I was for sure they're going to hunt and kill him and like think he was a pig, and I was like, this is going to be awful. That it didn't happen, and I was, I guess, glad that my imagination is more disgusting than William Golding's is. But it did seem that I was setting up something horrendous. But it became something horrendous, I suppose, just like the lack of knowing. You know, this kid probably won't be rescued. He's probably dead already. Right. Like, who knows what the fuck happened to him? He was just a kid, and he's now totally gone. Any other thoughts before we enter into our canon versus canon?
Well, I think we should talk about the ending. So they end up getting saved by just sheer accident. In fact, their own descent into madness ends up doing it inadvertently, because instead of keeping the signal fire alight, they end up causing a forest fire. And then the forest fire alerts people to their presence, right? So the beast ends up being a dead guy, a dead parachutist from a dog fight that was happening. Because this is during World War II, I assume. It doesn't actually say.
There's implication that there's like atomic warfare, or there's like some hint of that.
Mm. Yeah, they talk about they talk about maybe we're here because they dropped the bomb, right? Is the thing, but we don't. It's not actually verified. So there's like they're like almost saved and then not, and then their chance to get saved, they blow it, and then they finally get found, and then this dude, he's like a army officer, naval officer,
yeah,
comes on the beach and like looks at him, is like, oh. You guys are here. What are you just fucking around? Because they're like dressed like savages and like literally dragging a body around or whatever. And then he is like embarrassed of them for acting so uncivilized for young English boys. And then he like turns around and starts crying because he doesn't want to be seen. It's very strange. You know, he literally is like the embodiment of that balance, which is also just fucked because he's a grown man doing the same thing they are. And then embarrassed about it. And it's a little hard to read it to know exactly how it was meant to be read, I think. I'm not sure that it's like a condemnation of the kids, but...
Here's the passage. The naval officer says, "We saw your smoke, and you don't know how many of you there are." Ralph says, "No, sir." And the officer says, "I should have thought," said the officer as he visualized the search before him, "I should have thought that a pack of British boys, you're all British, aren't you, would have been able to put up a better show than that. I mean..." And Ralph says, "It was like this at first," said Ralph, "before things..." He stopped. "We were together then." The officer nodded helpfully. "I know. Jolly good show, like the Coral Island," which is a reference that I don't understand. I'm sure explained something. I read that as in kind of like the religious sense, too, of like God's judgment. It seemed like parents and the adult world was treated as the world of gods, or of the world of like the Christian version of God, essentially. It was like, they will save us. They will sort of give us salvation if we can be rescued by them, essentially. And so when God does come, God is disappointed in what he sees that man has done. And his judgment is like, "I thought you would have not fucked this up." But then is still, I guess, not graceful, but sort of like has this sense of like, well, you know, it happens, I guess. But yeah, that part did fuck with me too. Where I was like, oh, wow, this book literally has God coming in and saying that humanity is horrible. This is like Old Testament shit.
But in the book, he kind of represents like, kind of like Prick was saying, like, the people who taught them to do that, like in the and like doing the same thing. And in the Lowry afterward, she says she only hates one character, and it's the naval officer at the end.
Oh, really? That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to read that character's response and be like, but you didn't see what happened here. Like, if you had gone through it like the rest of these boys would, maybe you'd feel differently.
But I mean, he's fighting a war. You know?
Yeah, no, totally. So, it's a great ending. Even knowing that that's how it ended, I was still really taken with that. The way it ends, even the last lines, like we maybe read these for our last line discussion, but yeah, in the middle of them, with filthy body, matted hair, and unwiped nose, Ralph wept for the end of innocence, the darkness of man's heart, and the fall through the air of the true wise friend called Piggy. It's a nice line there. The officer, surrounded by these stories, was moved and a little embarrassed. He turned away to give them time to pull themselves together and waited, allowing his eyes to rest on the trim cruiser in the distance. Yeah, like for a story like the end, just like, and then they left. It's like very stark and fucked up. Okay, well, let's discuss our canon versus canon concept. So we were thinking about these books and the canon lists or these reading lists, and we wanted to read them and also discuss whether they belong in these lists or not. And if not, would we replace them with other readings that were maybe more contemporary or more relevant or more interesting? And if we did, we would place the original book in a canon and shoot it out to sea. So we have our canon set up, ready to go. What do you guys think? Should we load Lord of the Flies into the canon and rocket it out to sea? Or should we let it be read by high school and middle school students in perpetuity?
I'd say canon.
Which one?
1N. Yeah, I think keep it around.
Yeah.
I keep it around too.
Totally agree. Yeah, this has to stay. This is
such a good book. Unanimous. No canon.
I was thinking about possible options just in case we did want to replace it. What would I replace it with? The only thing I come up with is Hunger Games.
Hunger Games is the obvious example.
But I wouldn't want to lose this to Hunger Games.
This should be read right next to it.
Totally. I can see reading them both and getting different kinds of value from them, but this is not, there's nothing here. There's some problematic stuff in this. There's some like Western racism, good old fashioned English racism here. That's not surprising, unfortunately.
There's weird homophobia too.
Yeah, for sure. But not so much that I would think this is like gonna harm students if they read it or cause them unrelated trauma, I guess. And I feel like the writing is so strong, I wouldn't want to sacrifice this from the list. This seems like it has to be on there.
Mm. Yep.
Good work.
Add it to the new canon.
Yeah. Let's make a new list with Lord of the Flies as number one. Should we on air decide our next read for this series, or should we do that off air so that we don't fuck it up?
There's a bunch of options. If you can think of something else, let us
know. Yeah, really do. We'd love to hear that on Twitter at YikeBabies, and then email us at Gmail. Oh, God. YikeBabiesPodcast at gmail.com. Let us know. I miss my rhythm, so I was told to have it. Send us your thoughts on possible canon or canon books there. We'd love to have your suggestions, because our experiences are based on our own reading list. We'd love to hear what your reading list look like. I feel like we're going to do Gatsby sometime pretty soon. That seems like a
sorry, Brick.
It's fine. Watch. Maybe I'll like it.
But yeah, we want to know more. Wait, what did you list? And also, your thoughts on The Lord of the Flies. What did you think of this novel? Did you like it when you were a kid? Did you read it now? Would you ever read it if you had read it before? Let us know all those things in our various social media outlets. Now, for more Yak Babies content, go to patreon.com/yakbabies, and you can subscribe for $1 a month and get access to our Patreon, where there's a lot of other stuff going on. There's games, there's bro-to-bro discussions going on there, power hours, fantasy drafts with monsters and cabinet positions and authors, and lots of audio clips of discussions that you're not supposed to hear that we're letting you hear for $1, because that's what we want. With like the money in exchange for our shame. Go find it all there.
Aaron's baking skills
and other skills too, sadly. Yeah. Pooping on the wall. You'll find it all there for $1. So do that. Until then, Yak Babies, yakking off.
The Yak Babies would like to thank all their loyal listeners, and especially their patrons past and present, including Michael, Bonnie, Sebastian, David, and William Howard Taft.